I feel, and correct me if I'm off base here, but I feel, and tell me if I'm reading too much into this, but I feel like I've been spending too much time at my desk. Like I've been spending too much time in this chair. I've also feel like I'm spending too much time in this shirt. I'm wearing two shirts because it was cold today, but now it's hot in my office and I can't turn the fan on because I'm recording and I'm very hot. In any case, we're going to watch the Berenstain Bears. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, 10 years solid, Phil Gonzalez. 500 plus episodes solid, Phil Gonzalez. This is episode, I think, 502 or something. But I looked at my, like, Spotify, because or maybe it wasn't Spotify, maybe it was, like, Apple Podcasts. I'm not sure. They tell you, like, this show has this many episodes. It was, like, 530. So it was more than 530 episodes now is where we're sitting. And we are in the midst. We are smack dab in the middle of the fun watching the Berenstain Bears Saturday morning TV show. This week, we've got a cool double feature of the Berenstain Bears. What's it called? And the hidden treasure, the something with the snooky hidden treasure. And we've got another one that's a famous favorite of mine, a famous favorite story of mine. The Berenstain Bears, known to lay people as Save That Back Scratcher. But I believe this one's called like the Endangered Back Scratcher or something. And it is an episode that was adapted into a chapter book that redefined the way we think, and by we, I mean me, and by me, I mean myself, about Bear Country. I don't even need these headphones on yet. What do I have headphones on? I'm going to take these, I'm going to put these around my neck like I'm saying I'm kind of a cool recording guy. I'm a cool recording guy, and we are going to be watching this extremely fun double feature of the Berenstain Bears today. I don't know why I'm trying to sell you on this. You're watching this because you want to watch the Berenstain Bears. You're listening to this because you've been listening to me for 10 and a half years. Why am I like, this is going to be fun, kids. We're going to have a great time. Let's go watch our cartoons. Like I'm like some sort of Howdy Doody-esque spinoff that's just there to sell sugary cereal and get kids to watch bad syndicated cartoons, which if you want to sponsor this, I will sell anything if you pay me to do it at this point. I will, you give me a couple $100 a week and I will pitch the worst for you. I will pitch a box full of sand that's being marketed as a children's drink. Just give me some money. That's it. I have no scruples. I'm unscrupulous boy. The Magic Man. And we're going to watch the Berenstain Bears today, so put on your headphones, because this is an immersive experience. Maybe I'll try to make it an immersive experience. And let's hit the theater. I'll see you once the show is over. And my face is huge. And we're back! We just watched the Berenstain Bears and the Not-So-Buried Treasure and the Berenstain Bears and the Condemned Backscratcher. Not the Endangered Backscratcher. This Backscratcher is not actually, I guess it was endangered. It was in danger of being chainsawed down by five bears with chainsaws. But let's start off with the Berenstain Bears and the Not-So-Buried Treasure. Now, I'm going to pull this up. All right, so the Not-So-Buried Treasure was written, the story was by Stan and Jan Berenstain, but the script itself, the teleplay itself, was written by Bill Shinkai, who doesn't have a whole lot of credits to his name, with the exception of Berenstain Bears, six episodes of the Berenstain Bears. However, he did write one episode of Tony Orlando and Dawn, two episodes of The Facts of Life, and story by credit on those. Two episodes of Different Strokes, and the story by credit on those. And then six teleplay credits for the Berenstain Bears. And he appeared in one episode of MASH as a Chinese patient. Bill Shinkai, TV writer. Not sure what he did after this. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page, but, so a sitcom writer who then looks like he then got into cartoon writing because that's where he ended up. His last credit was six episodes of the Berenstain Bears. So this was a not so buried treasure, which also exists in book form. Now it says on the website that it is based on the book, Not So Buried Treasure. Not So Buried Treasure did not come out until 1986, until the following year. So it came right on the heels of this episode, and it is essentially the same basic story. So, but in like the same basic story, it's got a weird sort of it's a little aimless. It feels padded. Plot-wise, character-wise, situationally, simply because it doesn't seem like there was enough there to create a full 10-minute episode of the Berenstain Bears. The gist of it is that Mama and Papa and the Cubs are at the grocery store shopping, and Papa goes to pick up a magazine for Mama. He finds a magazine that's like how to make $1 million easily or something. It's a clear just a scam magazine. It's got all these get-rich-quick schemes in it. And one is that you might be able to find treasure buried in your backyard in Bear Town, in Bear Country, at Pirate's Cove, which is a place, I guess, that exists that is named after the Treasure Island in Bear World. So Robert Louis, like Robert Bruin Stevenson or whatever his name is, wrote their version of Treasure Island, set it in Bear Town, which I guess is near a cove, I guess, and... But it's also based on the exploits of Long John Silver, who in Bear World was a real pirate. So I do want to point out that like there is a diversion of historical fact from a non-historical fact in Bear World. Some of what we think of as fictional characters are real people in their world. So Long John Silver was a real pirate who supposedly buried treasure somewhere in Bear World, Bear Town, at least according to this ripoff like scam newspaper that Papa picks up at the grocery store. Also, there's this extended moment in the beginning where Papa sings Wild Wild Honey, except it's wild, big, big money. And he tosses money. He thinks he's going to get rich. Tosses money at the Cubs, who then demand candy from Mama. And it's almost like the book where they keep throwing tantrums. They throw tantrums for stuff. What's that one called? It's not Bad Manners. What's that one? What is the name of it? I can't even think of it. It's the one with the squeezy cat tongue things and the... I don't even remember what it's called anymore. It's not Too Much Junk Food, but it has shades of Too Much Junk Food and that book. God, I can't think of which book that is. What's the book where they're acting like brats the whole time? I don't know. I know there's a PBS episode based on it, a Nelvana episode that is nothing like the book because they can't show the Cubs being that bad in the later series. But in any case, it feels like that. Like they're begging for candy. They want candy. Mom was like, they end up getting what they want. I think, I can't remember, but because this is a bulk of the episode. There's a lot happening at the grocery store. Then you get Papa reading the magazine and he's like, oh, there might be buried treasure. There might be buried treasure in Pirate's Cove. Pirate's Cove is based on Pirate's Cove, or is the basis for Pirate's Cove from Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, except it's called like Treasure Grizzly Island. The Cubs are like, wow, how are we going to get to it? Mama then calls Grizzly Gran, who comes over with her crystal ball and is like, you will find treasure. You will find treasure. But Papa's like, but we still don't know where to dig for it. And the Mama's like, you know what? I think there was a treasure map up in the attic. So Papa goes up into the attic, a la the Goonies, finds a treasure map and is like, got to follow this treasure map. And the Mama's like, oh, you don't believe that old treasure map. And he's like, oh, it's a map. It's got an X on it. I bet that's where the treasure is. And so she's like, well, you can't go yet because it says on the map that you can only find the treasure by the light of the moon. So you have to wait till the night, tonight, late at night, to go dig up the buried treasure. So they all go out. He sings Big, Big Honey again, or Big, Big Money. They dig and they find a treasure chest. It's buried pretty deep. They find a treasure chest. They open it up. What's it full of? Photographs of the family, because that's the real treasure. And Grizzly Gran is there with her crystal ball. She and Mama went out in the middle of the night, or before the middle of the night, and buried this huge trunk, filled it with mementos, family mementos, buried it like 5-6 feet below the surface of the earth, covered it up again well enough that Papa wasn't like, this is a freshly dug hole. Dig it up. The real treasure is your family. That's the message. Not enough plot for a satisfying episode of television. Really not enough plot. There's shenanigans, but there's not like amusing shenanigans. There's a lesson, but not like a heavy lesson. It's just, They're promised treasure. They don't get treasure. They get a bunch of photographs. There was a song, still is, still exists. There was a song called One Tin Soldier. I've gone off on this song, not on this show, but I've gone off on this song before. Angered a lot of people when I've gone off on it, because One Tin Soldier was a song that was the theme song of a movie called Billy Jack, which is about a guy who was half Native American, and he was like a peace-loving guy. He only believed in peace, and he would achieve peace by absolutely killing anyone who made him upset. It's really weird. There was like three Billy Jack movies, totally self-funded. These were like the most like successful independent films when they first came out. Like, these were indie movies. Think the Benji movies, except instead of a lovable, fluffable dog who gets into adventures, it's like a grim man pretending to be half Native American, I think, is what happened in those movies. I don't remember. In any case, it had a theme song, a piece of music that would play called One Tin Soldier. You've probably heard it. Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom. And it's a story. Okay, here's why I get in trouble when I talk about One Tin Soldier. Because One Tin Soldier is... quite possibly, and I say this like in all fairness, it's quite possibly the worst piece of music ever written. It's a terrible song. It's an absolutely awful song. But a lot of people love it. I've said that before, and people have been like, I love One Tin Soldier. It's so meaningful. The plot of One Tin Soldier is there's a kingdom on a mountain, there's a kingdom in a valley. And on the mountain is a treasure buried beneath a stone, and the valley people want that treasure. So they invade the mountain kingdom. Or maybe the valley has the treasure and the mountain people want it. I don't remember. One of the two has the treasure buried beneath a stone. So the other people want it, so they invade, and they literally like kill everyone in the town to get this treasure. They dig up, they lift the stone, and there's just a piece of paper that says, this is the stupidest thing in the world. It's not a stupid idea. It's a lovely idea, but it's so stupid. They lift up the stone, and it's just a piece of paper, and it says, peace on earth. That's the treasure. The real treasure is peace on earth. I get it. I get the meaning. I'm not a heartless, soulless cad. I get the sentiment. However, why would they have that under the stone? They should also, when they're being invaded and murdered by the other kingdom, have been like, oh, just look under the stone. Look right here. That's the treasure right there. That's it. That's it. You don't have to kill anybody else. That's literally all we have. We just have this one stone. Someone did a sampler. Says peace on earth. We hid it under the stone. Don't know why. Probably would have done a lot more good if we had hung it, I don't know, on the front of the town, maybe on the wall of the town, peace on earth. You would have ridden up and been like, oh, probably shouldn't kill these people. Instead, we took the sign that said peace on earth and hit it so no one could ever see it. I don't understand. Maybe that's the point. Maybe like they were at fault for hiding peace on earth. I don't know. In any case, this is the same basic story. What's the treasure? The real treasure is your family. Now, I did just rewatch It's a Wonderful Life. I say just. It was a little while ago. But if you ever want to see me cry like an infant, I guess that's it. If you ever want to see me cry like the most upset infant, sit me down in front of It's a Wonderful Life. There's like five moments in that movie that leave me a mess, starting with old Mr. Gower when he almost poisons the kid and George takes the medicine back and then he hits him. But George is still just like, it's okay, I understand you're sad. Like that moment alone, the kid who played George Bailey, Bobby Anderson, I think his name was. He played young George Bailey. Phenomenal actor. Phenomenal. I know he only acted for like a couple of decades and then he retired from acting. He died like a while ago, but into his years. But I that kid is such a good actor. That moment alone just wrecks me. There's so many moments that wreck me. When Uncle Billy is like, when he one of us is going to jail and it's not going to be me. And he throws Billy, and Billy like collapses on the desk and he's sobbing. And then that squirrel crawls up on his shoulder. Like, it's just a squirrel. It's an actual squirrel. But it crawls up on his shoulder like it's trying to comfort him. And this nutty old man who you've just been laughing along with because he's kind of goofy and silly and he's kind of a comedy character, sobbing in shame into his arms. I'm a goner. I'm a goner. Zuzu's petals. In any case, I don't remember what I was talking about. Because the end, I mean, I'm not even going to spoil the ending. I'm just going to say the point where Harry Bailey comes back and says to my brother, George, the richest man in town. And then the thing says, no man is a failure who has friends. And you're like, yeah, that's the real threat. Like, that's the point of the movie. Money helps. I mean, the movie is also just like, unfortunately, money has to help because that's the capitalist society we live in. It's not these people's fault that their lives revolve around this horrible millionaire who treats them like dirt and they are barely scraping by. But who, spoilers, gets no comeuppance. This isn't a Christmas Carol. It's a reverse Christmas Carol. It's a Wonderful Life is a reverse Christmas Carol. It's based on a short story. His name I can't remember. Very short story. That basically starts with George at the bridge and then the Clarence showing up. But it's a reverse. It's a reverse Christmas Carol. I knew there's no Christmas episode this year, so I'm getting into Christmas now. It's a reverse Christmas Carol. Christmas Carol is about a miser, a horrible old miser, who is visited by ghosts and shown just how much he's impacted the world in a negative way, essentially. Like how miserable he's made the world, but how good and cheerful people are regardless. How good people, how humanity is in spite of people like him. But the fact that he does touch people, he does affect humanity, he is a part of humanity whether or not he wants to be. And so he'll make a bigger impact being a positive part of humanity than being a negative part of humanity. And Scrooge learns that lesson. Remember, Scrooge knows early on what the game is. Early on in A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is like, oh, I get it. You're showing me the past so that I'll change my ways. Well, I get it. Like, that's not what they're doing. Almost every adaptation of A Christmas Carol makes that mistake. Scrooge isn't learning to be a good person by being shown sad things throughout his life, or they're simply letting him see that he has an impact on the world, whether he wants to be a part of this world or not. And that whether or not he intends to, he's making people miserable who are good people. Like, they're as good as this world. It's hard for me to explain. Christmas Carol is a lot deeper. So the reverse of that is It's a Wonderful Life, which is a wonderful man, a wonderful man who everybody loves, who thinks he is a bad, who thinks the world would be better off without him, who thinks that he's worth more dead than alive. And he gets shown by a spirit that he also does have an impact on the world. Like, it's this mirror image of, so instead of it being like, you've got to become a better person, it's like, you are a great person and you have affected this world. If you were not here, this world would be worse, a much worse place. And that applies to everyone. Like, that applies to everyone. So that's like the It's a Wonderful Life thing. So I get what they're saying. That's the real treasure. However, I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second in this story. Moving on. The Berenstain Bears and the Condemned Backscratcher is the exact same story as the Berenstain Bears. Bear Scouts save that backscratcher, with the exception of there being no mention of the Great Bear War. There's no mention of the Great Bear War, but it's the quick rundown. Old Shag sits in the middle of Bear Town Square. That's where bears come to scratch their backs. It's been there for forever. Grizzly Gramps is chastising the kids because they're goofing around near it, too close to it. And while he's chastising the kids, a guy comes and puts a condemned sign on it. It's being torn down to make way for a new freeway or a highway. And they're like, what a new highway. Turns out the highway is a scheme cooked up by Raffish Ralph and Mayor Honeypot to make money. They're going to build it with subs. It's going to be named the Horace J. Honeypot Highway. And he's like, we're going to make a ton of money off this. And Horace J. Honeypot's like, how? Oh. And Raffish Ralph's like, we're going to use substandard materials. And I guess get the funding and then skim off the top and pay the lowest bidders, I guess, is the way it's going to work. In any case, it's a town square. Like, they show a map of it, and it's just going to be a four-way stop. Like, just a four-way with stop signs. Like, it's just a simple four. It's not a highway. They're just tearing down old shag to put a stop sign in, basically. I thought, because I forgot this was 85, I was like, oh, they're going to end up just building a roundabout. Like, that would make sense. There's cars there. It's definitely, it's not just a pedestrian walk. There's cars there. So the town throws a fit and is like, you can't do this. Old shag has been here for generations. And mom is on the historical society. So she creates a fuss, and Honeypot's like, it doesn't matter. It's going ahead. All these bears show up with chainsaws. And what happens? They find out it's a scam. And it doesn't go through. It was never going to go through. That's the thing. It was never going to work. Raffish Ralph is like, there's too much traffic in this part of town, and there's cars everywhere. And it's because he lied and, like, told them that there was going to be free honey given away there. So people are like, where's my free honey? And, like, Raffish Ralph is like, I went to the Honey Depot, and I got this cheap honeycomb that doesn't even have any honey in it. And Horsey Honeypot's embarrassed, but he wants to scratch his back. In any case, they don't tear down the tree. That's the long and short of it. I love a lot of things about this episode. I love that the bears show up with the chainsaws already running. There's like five or six bears who show up, chainsaws high, walking up with their chainsaws. And it's like, zzzz. Like, they've been walking for like a good half a mile from wherever they parked their truck. Just started the, and just like walking up to me. Second, I don't know why you need that many bears to cut down this one tree. There's so many bears with chainsaws. It's a single shack. It is a hefty tree. It's a big tree. But it's not going to be safe having five guys with chainsaws standing around the tree, like, sort of, I guess, sawing towards the middle is how they're going to do it. Seems poorly thought out. But also, apparently this was never run by the city council. It was never run by any of the residents. No one was ever like, do we want a freeway? None of that ever happened. This was just announced one day. So this was never going to get built. Honeypot would have been sued out of his pants by everyone. There's so many laws that he was breaking. Never would have happened. We do get to see, there's a moment where Farmer Ben is like, where's my free honey? I came here looking for free honey. And I don't think Farmer Ben would have driven into Beartown for free honey. A, he owns an apiary. He has bees. We've seen his bees. We know that he makes his own honey, or he doesn't make his own honey. He sells the honey the bees make. Second, I don't think he would contribute to the traffic jam. If anything else, he would just ride a horse or something. I don't know. It just seemed weird that, like, Farmer Ben was the one who was like, where's my free honey? The biggest thing about this episode is that this episode, the Berenstain Bears Kingdom Back Scratcher, story by Stan and Jan Berenstain, teleplay by Linda Wolverton. Linda Wolverton. Now, you may be saying, who's Linda Wolverton? If you don't know much about, like, the history of animation, if you don't know a lot about, like, writers of films, Linda Wolverton, she's a novelist, she's a playwright, she's a screenwriter, but her biggest claim to fame is that she was the first woman to write an animated feature for Disney. That movie was Beauty and the Beast, which was the first animated film ever to be nominated for Best Picture. She co-wrote The Lion King. She worked on Mulan. She wrote the book for the Broadway adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, where she received a Tony Award nomination and won an Olivier Award. She wrote screenplays for Maleficent, Alice in Wonderland, Alice of the Looking Glass, the sequel to Maleficent. She got her start, though. She had a traumatic childhood, a terribly traumatic childhood. She got a degree in theater in the 1970s. She was a drama instructor in the 1970s. She got a job for CBS, I guess, to pay the bills. She was a programming executive in children and late night programming. While she was working there, though, she wrote a young adult novel called Star Wind. Then she writes a second novel called Running Before the Wind, both published by Houghton Mifflin. While she's doing this, she gets jobs working for animated shows. She writes teleplays for Ewoks, the Dennis the Menace cartoon, the Real Ghostbusters, this show, My Little Pony, Chippendale Rescue Rangers. But she really wants to work for Disney. So this is one of my favorite stories. She goes to the Disney offices in Burbank, California. She has a copy of her book, Running Before the Wind. She hands that book to a secretary, and she just says, I need you to give this to somebody to read. And just leaves. The secretary was like, okay, and gave it to Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the studio chairman of Disney at the time, who reads the book, because Katzenberg was a mensch, and invites her in for a meeting. The next thing she knows, she gets hired to write Beauty and the Beast. Now, not only was she the first woman to write a Disney animated feature, Beauty and the Beast was the first Disney animated feature to be written, and I just know this from knowing this, to be written as a screenplay, as opposed to a series of storyboards or story beats. Usually the stories were sort of assembled with visual art, with putting it up on the wall and rearranging story beats and elements. And you didn't have like a person just typing up, like writing up a screenplay, like a screenwriter does. But she wanted to do it this way because working with Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, they were like, let's write Beauty and the Beast like we were writing a Broadway musical. We're just going to write it like a musical for the screen. And that became like the biggest revelation. And that was one of the reasons it's such a, like just a solid, coherent movie. That incorporates the music well. I just love Beauty and the Beast. Doesn't get it. I mean, it was nominated for Best Picture, but I still don't think it as a single entity. Broadway show, let it go, remakes, sequels, all that stuff, whatever. As a standalone entity, the movie Beauty and the Beast is just a solid piece of filmmaking. Down off my soapbox. She also wrote the screenplay to Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey. She helped with Aladdin. She co-wrote the book for the stage musical of Aida, which is a Disney-produced stage musical written by Elton John. Maleficent, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. She's just great. She writes great female characters. She is massively talented, and her work stands out no matter what she's working on, including the Berenstain Bears. And she's written several episodes. She writes several episodes of the show. I know I've talked about her in the past when I was discussing, I think it was the Wild Honey series when I did one of that years ago. But I really wanted to stop and just say Linda Wolverton, amazing. Just amazing. Just amazing. So that was the Berenstain Bears and the Not-So-Buried Treasure and the Berenstain Bears and the Condemned Back Scratcher. One very strong episode. The other one was not this strong, a little padded, Not-So-Buried Treasure, a little padded. Not my favorite episode of the bunch, but still a good episode because it's the Berenstain Bears. So remember, all these episodes are available to watch without my commentary on the Berenstain Bears YouTube site. Just go there, type in the name of the episode. It's most likely there. And I will be back with more Berenstain Bears goodness. What is the next episode going to be? If you don't want to be spoiled on what the next episode is, don't listen. But the next episode is going to be the Berenstain Bears. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is at all. What is this? I don't think I've ever watched this episode. What? What? I don't think I've ever watched this episode. That can't be it. That can't be it. That can't be it. That can't be it. Hold on. That can't be the name of the episode. That has to be a mistake. Hold on. I can't see my keyboard. Oh, I guess that's the name of the episode. The name of the episode is Berenstain Bears. It's not that funny. It had to have been wrong, and it wasn't. Kong for a day. I get it. Like, I get it now. It's a Big Paw-centric episode. Kong for a day. But also, the Berenstain Bears Blaze a Trail, which is another Papa gets in the way of the Cub Scouts, the Cubs, the Bear Cubs. The Scouts episode. So I'm looking forward more to Kong for a day, I guess. But thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of this. And I'll see you all next time. Wow, I've been going way too long. Deep in bear country.